Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And good morning. Happy first day of spring training for the Mariners.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. Okay.
No
All
idea.
Right.
Producer,
let They're me know in that. Arizona and the warm and.
Probably. Yeah, getting a suntan. And oh, boy. And it's February here. February.
Then why don't you send us for training to Arizona?
Yes. or better yet, Hawaii, because that's where you were last week.
Well, for training, I take you to the conference room here in this building.
Yeah. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there's no windows in that conference room.
No windows.
I don't want any distractions. When I'm presenting biochemistry, I want you to focus.
That's right.
Oh.
Coffee you'll get.
Yes, that's true.
I do offer you coffee or tea.
Yes. That's right.
And but, long, dry, boring lectures.
Welcome back, though, Dr. Mixon. I bet you were having a wonderful Kona Coast Aloha coffee last weekend.
Yes, I was enjoying my coffee out on the balcony overlooking the ocean. And
in Oahu.
On Oahu, yes.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
What was the favorite thing you did? What was the most funnest thing you did while you're there with your family?
Most funnest. Do you realize this is a grammatical abomination?
I do, yes.
Okay.
It ain't that bad, Dr. Mixon.
Okay.
Oh, my.
All right. Now, well, I don't know.
The bestest.
The most fun we had, I think, was the underwater motor scooters.
Wow.
Where,
what?
You know, yes, and I have some great pictures of those on my phone.
Okay, and you said underwater motor scooters.
Motor scooters.
Never
yes.
even heard of this.
They run with electricity, so they have a battery pack and a big oxygen tank in front, and you put a helmet over your head, and they drop you down into the ocean, and it's like a motorcycle. You got
through the water?
Handlebars, and yeah, a little thing you squeeze to kick the motor into high gear, and you can steer yourself around and chase the fish down through the ocean floor. It's really
very cool.
Wow.
So you take a boat to the ocean, and then you go into the water, and they put these things on you, and they say, okay, go down.
Yeah, well, yeah, each person has a free diver associated with them.
Okay.
And so there's two boats. One of them has like 15 of these devices, and they use a little mini crane to drop them down in the
water. Okay, I was imagining Dr. Mixon like going off a ramp. You know, the pier and, you know, the plank and then going into the water. But
we're on a boat.
Okay.
And then they bring it over to the side. And you go down the ladder into the water and you duck underneath and come up into the bubble helmet.
Okay.
And then you sit down and straddle the device and they hit a button and the ballast, the air that's providing the buoyancy is ejected and it lets it sink down under the water.
Okay.
And then you can grab your little handlebar and start driving around.
Oh,
it's really
cool
pretty neat.
How cool is that?
Yeah, so you got about a 30-minute air supply down there. So but it gives you 30 minutes to drive around under the ocean, you know, chasing the fish and letting the fish chase you.
This is amazing.
A whole new way to snorkel.
And you know I'm going to Google this as soon as we're off the show today going, what?
Don't have to come up to kind of wash the water, wipe the water away from your goggles.
Mist and the fog.
And you don't have to just stay right at the surface and look down at the fish.
You know,
you're
right there with them.
Drop right down with it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
How
very
exciting.
Cool.
Well, okay. That
you know, we had one
thing.
Guy with us who got kind of claustrophobic and he had to drop out. So but that's why they've got a free diver with you.
With
so
you.
That okay. You can signal him that you're having trouble, and he'll come get you out and take okay. you back to the surface and so
okay.
on.
Okay, good.
But we all, my family just had a great time.
Nice.
Yes.
Chase each other around.
Yeah, nice.
That
yeah.
is wonderful. Well, welcome back. We had Dr. Dan Nelson in last week. A lot of pain calls concerning shoulders and knees and toes and feet and backs.
For the pain doctor, that'd be appropriate,
the pain
right?
doctor, Dr. Dan gotcha. Nelson. And Dr. Umat, of course. So.
Yeah.
But you guys are here yawning just a bit because you had a
party last night.
Big party for longevity and all the staff and just a wonderful, wonderful celebration.
Yeah, we do that every year. We have a big party for all of our staff.
What do you call it? Is it the longevity?
Yeah, well, you know, we have the longevity, the Promedev, the Bella Medica. We put all the companies together. We invite everybody in.
All the doctors, all the estheticians.
All the doctors, the estheticians, the front office, the people that work in the fulfillment center, you know, over. So, yeah, we just invite everybody together out at the Overlake Country Club.
Wonderful.
Put up a big buffet spread and, you know.
And were you there till the very end, doctors?
And beyond.
Yeah. Oh, boy. One is going yes, one is going no.
I went home at 9:30.
Yes, we had to get up early this morning.
I normally get up at 5, so although today I slept way in. And but Samara went out for the after party.
Did
drinking and dancing a little
I
more.
I did, and so many of the team came, and it was awesome.
Yeah. Oh,
you missed
very
it.
Good.
And then
I'll be there next time. You know it.
And then some of the youngest ones went out to the after party. After party.
Oh yes, boy, the after party. Right. After party. After.
Which will last probably that get long. Them home about sunup.
Yeah, that's probably right. when we started that's the radio right. show. Well, that's
oh, what
that's
it is
awesome.
To be young.
So much to celebrate. Oh, well, the calls are just diving right in. I haven't even given the phone number yet. But why don't we just jump on some calls here?
Sure. You want to give out the
sure.
number?
Okay. Here's the number. If you've got a question for the doctors today, Dr. Jerry Mixon here, Dr. Samira Umat, and you. Here's the number, 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. We're going to start off with John calling in from Vancouver, Washington. Hi, John.
Hey, hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your community and your military service, doctor.
I've
got my personal care assistant on here with me, and I just quick go. We're on 89, so I'm having a little memory problems. But we're concerned about my prostate, and the first thing is there any food that really hurts your prostate, like makes it grow when in advance of when it should, I guess.
Okay. Well, first of all, judging from your voice, you are a man of some mature years, so it's not growing before it usually does.
Okay.
Usually by your 60s and 70s, it's growing pretty good. And no, it's not your foods that's doing it to you. It's your lack of progesterone that started dropping out when you were in your 40s or early 50s. How to explain this? The prostate stays small when you're young and you have high testosterone, high estradiol, high progesterone levels. And the prostate, like almost every other tissue in your body, has estrogen receptors in it. The estrogen receptors are anti-inflammatory. They decrease inflammation throughout most of your body. But in the prostate, the estrogen receptors, the two types of estrogen receptors, the alpha receptors in the prostate bond first to progesterone and then to estrogen. And the progesterone attachments to the estrogen receptors keep those receptors from immortalizing your prostate cells. As we age and our progesterone levels drop, those estrogen receptors in our prostate start impacting the epithelial cells in the prostate, and it starts making them live longer and longer. It keeps them from dying quickly like they normally do, because most cells, they live their expected lifespan, then they die and they get replaced by a new cell, okay? And this sort of autophagy is an important part of turning over your old used cells for fresh new cells. But as men's progesterone levels decline, they start making the prostate live longer and longer and longer. So they're dying more slowly, but they're still being produced at the old rate. And the result is the prostate gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Okay. That's why at our clinic, the vast majority of our men are on progesterone, even though most people think of that as a woman's hormone. It's not. It's a human hormone, and men are humans, so we need progesterone. The goal is to prevent it from getting bigger. Now, unfortunately, it doesn't shrink the prostate. You got a big prostate, you got a big prostate. There are some drugs that will shrink the prostate over time, but not progesterone. It just, its purpose is to keep it from getting any bigger, right? If we want to shrink it, we need to use the old first and second generation alpha blockers. And those will cause the prostate over the course of 18 months to 2 years to start shrinking down slightly. The problem is that most men don't pay attention to their prostate till it's already so big that it's causing problems. And they start having to get up to pee several times a night because the prostate is now impinging on the urethra so that the bladder can't empty fully. And so when you pee, you only pee off the top 20% or so of your urine. And so the bladder fills up again pretty quickly because that other 80% never really empties. Mm-hmm.
Can I chime in? I'm Kelly. I'm his caregiver. My brain just kind of overworks on some of these things. So first off, I was talking to John the other day about, you know, us women are taught to do Kegels, and us women are taught about menopause and hormone replacement younger. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame that men aren't taught these things in their 30s, 40s.
Because we have andropause. You guys have menopause because it pauses your menstruation. It really ought to be gynopause because it's far more important than your menstruation. What's really happening to women is their thyroid is diminishing, and so they're burning less energy, so they start getting fat because the same diet that kept you lean in your youth, now you're burning fewer calories because your thyroid is diminishing, so you're starting to gain weight. Your testosterone level is down, and so now you start getting anxious and nervous, and you don't tolerate stress as well, and your bones start to thin out with the combination of lower testosterone and lower estradiol, and your progesterone drops, and it's actually the progesterone drop that causes your periods to stop. That's the so-called menopause. But drive, ambition, self-confidence, weight, bone density, breast cancer starts to rise as your estrogen and testosterone are falling. Lots of bad stuff happening with aging women.
Yeah.
But it's happening to us men, too, and nobody talks about it.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. How about we talk about it when we come back from the break?
Yeah, yes. We got to take a break, but we'll be right back, and we'll talk about andropause.
Andropause. The men's menopause.
That's right.
Okay, we'll be back with more and then more phone calls. The lines are lit up. Anton, we're going to get to you right after John and Paul and Lori and woof! The phone lines are loaded. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We will be right back. Stay there.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again.
Okay.
And then I got business
on the road again.
Wow.
Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see.
We're talking with Dr. Mixon. He's given us his travel itinerary, so we are on the road again with Dr. Mixon.
Spend way too much time in airports.
We're all coordinating calendars, a little behind the scenes, in a month or so, you may be seeing, a couple of months, you might be seeing us, not just hearing.
That's right. Well, we hope before the end of March.
Okay.
I've got a consultant who's coming up with the lighting configuration.
Okay.
And once we get the lighting stuff done.
No fluorescence.
Yeah. I'm hoping that somewhere in March, this show will convert to a simulcast, both on the radio, mm-hmm. but also a video podcast, so that people can actually watch us live for this 4 hours.
There you go.
And so you use your computer instead of your radio.
Boy.
And you'll be able to watch us and hear us, and you can still call in. We'll still mm-hmm. do the show. It's just that we'll be in my office with lights and cameras and
that.
Doing the whole thing.
There you go.
So I'm hoping before the end of March.
All right. This is exciting. And someone on the last show said, we were very entertaining. Wow. Just wait until you see us two with Dr. Samira dancing during the breaks.
Shaking her bangles.
Dr. Mixon grabbing the microphone, singing along to the songs. And Lynette sneaking out to grab tea or sneaking up the hall because she had too much tea. It should be a fun. Looking forward to that. All right. We're going to get back to John. We were talking prostate with him and with his wife and andropause.
Yes. So instead of me just launching into a dissertation on andropause, tell us what your concerns are with John.
Well, I was just thinking, would something like the wild yam, the wild yam type supplement help, since that is supposed to be a natural progesterone, like,
The problem is that, he's not a yam. He's a human, and he needs human-type progesterones. And so we need to just, you need to have a doctor who prescribes it, and he can either do it as a cream or he can do it as a pill if he gets the micronized progesterone. I use a cream myself, and because I want the cosmetic effects. Progesterone in men and women makes the skin smooth and elastic and fills in some of the fine lines and creases, so you don't need Botox to look good. And so I put my progesterone on my face and neck and upper shoulders, all that skin that shows, because I feel so pretty, oh, so pretty. Anyway, so... Yeah, men are just as vain as women. Come on, we're human, and humans are vain, and we like to look good. So I use my progesterone in the areas where it shows.
Very smart.
Well, you'll have to devise a skincare routine for men. I think that'll be the next thing we should have you do.
Perhaps I should. Why not?
Why not?
Anyway, so what is there? So no, I don't recommend yam creams for men or women, because I want them to have the real human type hormones. And those, unfortunately, are, for better or for worse, we have to get through the compound in pharmacy, and that requires a prescription. But, there are doctors like us who do this, and you just have to see that doctor. That's all.
Nice. And then do the Kegels for men, do they truly help your urine flow? Yeah.
To some degree, yes. I mean, they tighten the pelvic floor muscles, okay? Now, the Kegels for women are useful for stopping urine leakage. And the problem with men is different, okay? The problem with women is that the bladder is actually on the front surface of the vagina, and it's attached there. And with age and childbearing, those pelvic muscles are damaged when you're putting an 8-pound baby through a 3-ounce opening. It tears a lot of the muscles and stretches things out. And so women get a problem in which they don't have enough muscle tone to tighten that sphincter and keep the urine from leaking out. So women, if they laugh or cough or sneeze or lift something heavy or move fast, will leak urine. Men leak urine for a very different reason. And that's because the prostate is enlarging so much that it is increasing the pressure on the urethra so that the bladder can't empty fully. Mm-hmm. And at some point, the bladder just stretches itself out and it can't hold anymore. And the pressure gets high enough that it squirts out some. And that urinary incontinence in a man is more due to the bladder being unable to empty fully. And so you're just kind of getting a little overflow leakage. So different purpose. The reason Kegels can help a man is very different, and that is that it gives him better control during intercourse. And so, you know, if he doesn't want to climax too early, he can use his better muscular control to give his partner more pleasure in their sex play.
So that's good to know.
Good information. I did not know guys could do Kegels. I didn't know this.
Yes, they can.
I'm going to ask my husband at lunch later. Well, maybe not at lunch, but.
That's right.
One other quick question on a different subject. On the liver flush, is that what it's called, Kelly?
It's a liver cleanse, and it's we were recommended by a herbalist. This I think it's called Tiao He cleanse. Is that safe for someone of better age? 89.
Yeah, he's 89, right? Yeah. Why would he need a liver cleanse?
Well, this herbalist did a German machine thing where you're holding some rod and she read fatty liver and intestinal, you know, issues. It would just be really good to do at least once, she's thinking.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, usually I'm worrying about liver if I'm seeing elevated liver enzymes. Mm-hmm. If people are on drugs or lifestyle issues that do toxic effects on the liver, if they're using too much alcohol, that sort of thing.
Right.
But that's not the case.
Yeah, for most people, a so-called liver cleanse is just a matter of giving them some diarrhea for a while.
That's what it sounds like this would do, is cleanse, you know, it's actually an intestinal cleanse. Yeah. However, she said it will cleanse the liver in the process. But we were just wondering if that would be something safe. I mean,
probably the safest way to enhance liver function is nettle.
Milk thistle.
Yeah.
Milk thistle, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's any concern, I'd say the safest thing to do is milk thistle. At 89, I don't, you know, I'm not sure that diarrhea or something bad happening is necessary if there's no reason to do it, right?
With guys pushing 90, I tend to be as gentle as possible.
Yeah. Yeah,
they don't have a lot of reserves.
Right.
She said that
would decrease my A1C. She said my A1C was increasing because of the liver.
I doubt it.
Well, how high is your A1C?
5.6. It went from 5.2 to 5.6 real fast.
Okay, that tells me that your average sugar is rising.
Yeah.
But it doesn't tell me anything specifically about your liver unless they assume you're making a lot of glucose.
Right. So I would repeat the test if it went from 5.2 to 5.6 really quickly and you haven't changed anything in your diet. First, I'd repeat the test. And then if you're thinking of doing something, I would look at the diet and clean it up a little bit, remove the sugars, stop eating late at night, remove the high glycemic index food and simple carbohydrates first. And then if you're really going to need a supplement, I'd probably start with chromium and something like berberine.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Use some cinnamon, you know, that'll help.
Yeah, besides cinnamon, it tastes good.
Yeah, that does.
Yes. Well, thank you guys very much. You're very helpful. God bless
you're
you.
Welcome, sir.
Have a great weekend. Bye.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you for
all
the
right,
call.
Thank you for the call. Lots of very good information there for us. We've got just a couple minutes before we hit the breaks and go to a break. Let's take Anton's question. Anton calling in from Seattle. And Anton, let's get your question for the doctors, and then we'll take a break and then come back and talk about it.
Okay.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the inguinal hernias, two of them.
Okay.
What the risks are, and various other questions I have.
All right. Before I can answer that, how old are you, Anton?
88.
88. All right. Well, we're going to take our little bit of break, and I'll come back and talk about inguinal hernia repairs in an elderly man.
Okay.
Something I have done many times back in my previous life as a country doctor.
Okay. We will get some information and some education. Stay right there, Anton. We'll be right back. We'll take a break. And we do have room for your questions as well. Here is the number to get through, 206-421-5757. We'll be back with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Umat in just a moment. Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. I'm Lynette. Dr. Jerry Mixon here, back from Aloha. And Dr. Samira Umat here as well. And we're talking with Anton from Seattle about what type of hernia, Dr. Mixon?
Two hernias.
Okay.
Hernias, yeah. These are actually late life manifestations of a birth defect.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The testicles actually start out up by the kidneys before we get born.
Okay.
And they migrate down retroperitoneally and then come out through the inguinal canal, a little opening in the groin. And then they migrate down under the skin, down to the scrotum.
Okay.
And the nerve supply and the blood supply to the testicles actually still starts up by the kidneys. Mm. And so that opening in the inguinal canal where the testicles went through has to stay open enough to allow the blood supply, the arteries and veins, as well as the spermatic cord to still go through there.
Hmm.
And some men, some men that opening, that little defect, is a bigger than it needs to be.
Oh, okay.
And so then through their lifetime with lifting and pushing and pulling and increasing intra-abdominal pressure, a piece of bowel will start pushing on that and actually stretch the opening a little bigger, and the gut actually starts coming down the same canal, trying to follow its way all the way down to your scrotum.
Okay.
And that's what a hernia is. When you see that bulge, that's actually a piece of your bowel that is following the spermatic cord out through the inguinal canal.
All right.
And so when a doctor puts his finger, puts it through the scrotum and pushes up into that inguinal canal and asks you to cough or strain, we actually feel that piece of bowel come down and hit our finger.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right. And in a large hernia where it's in there, we can actually feel it and push it back up through the canal and back into the belly. So,
and then will it stay?
Well, no.
Until the next time.
You still have the opening.
The opening's there,
and
right?
So what the hernia repair is actually making an incision in the groin, going in and grabbing the tissue on either side of that inguinal canal and pulling it partly closed. We have to sew it enough to narrow that space. Now, we can't close the space because if we do, we strangulate the testicles. Because we have to have the blood supply and the spermatic cord still, and the nerve supply, all three have to go through there. So we've got an artery, a vein, a spermatic cord, and the nerves all go through there. And so we tighten it up enough that we think this will keep the bowel out, but we can't tighten it too much or we damage the testicle. And it'll die and shrivel up and go away. And so it's kind of an artsy sort of surgery. You're doing it and you're saying, well, yeah, that feels about right. And you grab the cord and you move it back and forth, say, okay, it can still move. It's not squished too much, you know. So it's not a difficult surgery. But in a man Anton's age.
Yeah, 88.
His fascia, the connective tissues that we normally would use to pull together and sew, are pretty puny because his testosterone load has been low for a long time. And so his ligaments, his tendons, his fascial layers are usually pretty thin and fragile by his age. Mm-hmm. And so what we sometimes do is pull it together or actually take a little bit of a Dacron patch and sew the patch across part of the canal.
Okay.
And pull it closed and reinforce it with a patch so that the things can't get through there. Mm. The problem with the patches are that they cause a lot of scar tissue formation, and sometimes people get pain or inflammation from the patch itself. So we try to avoid the patch if we can, but if the tissue is just too poor to provide good strength, then we may add a little bit of a patch over the top.
Okay. So is that what you're considering having done, Anton?
Well,
is
this... I have another question. Dr. Mixon, can a large – those my hernias are very big, I mean really big, and can they actually restrict urination?
Not normally. Again, this is a piece of your gut, your abdominal bowel that's actually pushing down there. So if you've got a big prominent hernia, that means you've got a big opening or a big piece of gut coming through. Usually at your age, the urinary restriction is your prostate, not your hernia.
Well, my penis has virtually disappeared in the hernia.
Okay.
The hernias are so large. But that, and then I have another question. See, I'm on hormone treatment over a year now, Lupron and enzalutamide.
Yes.
And a little over a year ago, my PSA was 19. And then after I was on the hormone treatment, within 3 months or so, it came down to about 9, and then half a year ago, it came down to 0.04.
Okay.
And 3 months ago, three weeks ago, it was 0.05. So it's virtually undetectable. Does that mean my prostate cancer is disappeared now?
Well, it means that it's quiescent. It's not growing. It is inactive. It's still there. But it's inactive, it's not growing, it's not likely to do you any harm at this point. But that those same hormones that you're talking about that are dropping your PSA and protecting you from your prostate cancer for now also make that weakness, those tissues that your surgeon needs to work with, much weaker. Because the testosterone makes your ligaments and your tendons and your muscles strong, and you're blocking all your testosterone production. So he's going to have I would bet he's got a better than 50-50 chance of using a patch in addition to just pulling the tissue together, because the combination of your age and your hormone blocking is going to make your tissue pretty puny.
Yeah, I'm scheduled in a week from Monday to have a consult with the hernia surgeon at the UW, and to see whether I'm even qualified for surgery.
Yeah.
And then on the 22nd of April, I have a CAT scan scheduled to see what my prostate is doing, because about a year ago, I had a little trouble urinating, and the prostate was enlarged.
Yeah.
So my question is: should I have before if I qualify for a hernia operation, should I first have the CAT scan done to see what the prostate is doing?
Well, the CAT scan is an okay test for that. Personally, I prefer the MRI because it gives me more detail. But, they're going to almost certainly put a catheter in you when they do the surgery. And given your prostate symptoms, they may want to leave it in for several days after surgery, too, just to keep you from obstructing. So don't be surprised if you come out of surgery with a catheter in place. But it sounds like, you may be a candidate for a prostate procedure to shrink that down in some way.
Well, they try to take me off the hormones the next time I see him about May 1. But when you say catheter, my I have no penis left. So it's all covered up.
I understand, but when they push those hernias up out of the way, they can find it. So when they lay you down on the operating table, those hernias start trying to fall back into place anyway. That bowel will start moving.
Well, they used to fall back into place, but they don't anymore. They're really big.
Yeah, okay. Wow. Well, it sounds to me like they need to get in there and do a little something
right.
then.
But, so you've had them for a long time then, or did they just suddenly?
Well, yeah, for quite a while, but the most recent times it got really big.
Right. Okay.
And I had to take care of my wife, and I had to do a lot of lifting, and that didn't help the situation.
No, it certainly didn't.
Yeah.
All right, well, they'll be able to fix it for you. It's just a matter of which techniques they need to use. But
And as far as the anesthesiology is concerned, what do I have to worry about there? I'm on Pradaxa, blood thinner, for example, for heart flutter.
All right. Well, at your age, they're going to be very gentle with the anesthetic, and they can even do these procedures through a spinal instead of a general anesthetic if they need to. So
that would not have anything to do with the blood thinner or anything like that.
Well, the spinal would not. So they probably, but they'll use a very gentle anesthetic because old folks don't tolerate anesthesia very well.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to drop your IQ in addition to other things.
No.
Local anesthesia would be good enough.
If the hernias are that big, local might be a little difficult to give you adequate coverage. I've done hernia repairs under local, but generally they were younger, smaller people.
So at my age, if I can get by with urination, sometimes I have a little problem.
Okay. Tell you what, hold on. You hear the music. We've got to take a break. We're up against the clock. But I'll be back and we'll finish up with this. Okay?
That's right. Anton will be back, finish up with your question, and then Paul, you're next. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. Yeah, we want you to be still standing. Very good. Whoa. Big cough for me.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, don't get her laughing at songs. Lynette here and Dr. Jerry Mixon with Dr. UMAT. And we have Anton on the line talking about his hernias.
Yeah. Well, in this case, he had transformed over to his urination.
Yes.
Dr. Mixon, one of the questions I have, due to my age, if I can get by with urination, it's my oncologist. She thinks that maybe my hernias affect my urination. But if I can get by with urination and I have no real pain or any problem with the big hernias, should I even consider hernia operation? They don't bother me except they're big.
Yeah. The problem with big hernias is that if they torse, if they get twisted and caught in there, you actually can end up with a piece of necrotic bowel, and then you've got a surgical emergency. So it's going to depend on when the doctor examines you how big he thinks the defect is. If it's actually a big enough, generous hole that is not likely to obstruct, then he may just decide to let you live with it. Just because of your age. But my guess is that your large prostate is probably more likely to be your problem with intermittent urination.
Mm. You think it's the prostate. Well, in that case, I suppose I better have the CAT scan done to see whether the prostate...
Get the imaging done and take a look and see what's going on.
Does the big hernia affect the CAT scan in any way?
Shouldn't. No. Yes. They ought to be able to see fine with it.
Well, maybe I can convince them I need a MRI, which would be more precise. Yeah. But
it's far more precise, but it's more expensive, and that's why they like to keep the cost down.
So I'll go ahead with having the surgeon to the surgeon check me over and see whether I even qualify, and then maybe wait until I have my CAT scan and then decide how to proceed. Well, okay. I really appreciate your help.
You're welcome, sir. Happy to help. You take care and good luck.
Yes, we wish you the best, Anton. Thank you for calling. This is Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. I'm Lynette. Let's head to Tacoma. Paul is waiting for us. Hi, Paul. Good morning.
Hello, Paul.
Good morning to y'all. Well, I am on Lupron, Prolia, and Keytruda.
Okay.
And I have on my right arm, just above the elbow, a recurring, I'll call it a strong discomfort. It's not enough to but it's rather intermittent. Now, I kind of messed things up by I'm also taking hydrocodone for another discomfort. And that may be why it's intermittent, but I don't think so. It comes, it goes. Now, I've been on Crestor, and what I'm wondering, and I stopped just to see if that may be the cause. How long do the effects of Crestor, if they're not good, does it take for them to kind of disappear from the system?
Well, Crestor clears relatively fast. I mean, a matter of days to a week at the most. The question is, if you're having symptoms, you're on some rather potent drugs. From your drug list, it sounds like you've probably got a metastatic prostate cancer of some sort. And
yes.
It's probably not androgen sensitive anymore, which is a problem. Those tend to be the fastest growing, fastest spreading prostate cancers around. So these drugs are making all of your ligaments, all of your tendons, all of your fascia weak. So for you to get injuries that are going to be difficult healing and get inflammatory processes would not surprise me. You're probably more prone to injuries than 99% of the population just because you have no functioning androgen to give you strength and durability in your connective tissues. Trying to make a diagnosis on the telephone of what this intermittent pain above your elbow is, it's a losing proposition. I've got a lot more chances of being wrong than right.
But Crestor will clear in 3 days.
3 days, yeah. The problem is how long does it take for the metabolism to clear back up?
Yeah.
Well, okay, I've been off it more than 3 days, and it's still there.
Yeah.
Would it make sense to get an X-ray or something of that area?
Well, X-ray is not going to tell you much unless there's bone involved. First thing you need is a good physical exam.
Exactly.
You need a doctor to come and to lay hands upon the afflicted area.
Yeah.
Put your elbow, your shoulder through range of motion, check for pulses, see if he feels any defects in fascia, if he got any bulging there. So physical exam is step number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he wants to do imaging, probably it would end up being ultrasound or MRI as opposed to X-ray, because X-ray is pretty insensitive for soft tissue issues.
Mm-hmm.
It'll tell you, big bone problems, but not soft tissue.
Okay. My next question is, concerns metformin. You recommend something else if you're taking metformin. Was that B complex?
Yes, B complex. Metformin interferes with your ability to absorb and utilize B vitamins. And so people with on metformin without B supplementation are kind of famous for developing peripheral neuropathies and so on.
Mm.
So yeah, lots of B vitamins if you're on metformin.
And what would you recommend? I want to take it prophylactically.
Okay.
You've mentioned before that I just want to see what effect it might have on me. Do you have what would you recommend?
You mean in
dose
for metformin doses?
Dose.
Okay.
Yes.
I usually start fairly light and work it up, but you know, the biggest problem with metformin is bowel issues. People end up with diarrhea and abdominal cramping. So you don't want the dose to go up too fast. Let your gut adjust. You know, they make a 250, a
500, 1,000.
Yeah. And in sensitive people, I have even taken a 250 and cut it in half and started with 125 a day for a couple of weeks. And if they tolerate, then go to 250 twice a day, and then you go to the 500 twice a day, and so on. And 500 twice a day is usually enough for what you're looking for, the SIRT1 impact to get, you know, the extended lifespan. And that's a dose that most people, even non-diabetics, tolerate okay. But again, don't be shocked if you get loose stools and maybe a little bloating for a while until you adjust to it.
Okay. Thank you very much, doctors.
You're welcome. Take care, sir.
Thank you so much for the call, Paul. We have hour number two coming up on the other side of this break. Stay right there. Leading Edge Medicine will return.